What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Stand Up Guys Podcast, episode 183. I'm your host, Incomparable Zach Jones, joined as always by star of Nutbusters Hose for Hire, the phenomenal AJ Singh.
I'm famous. What's up, everybody?
Today we will be doing our review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. But before we get to probably the longest and most detailed review of this movie on the internet, we like to always start, AJ, with a kind of a spoiler-free overall impressions of the movie. So I got to ask you, I saw this movie a couple days ago. You just got out of the theater. This time around, did Bustin' make you feel good?
First of all, I wish that line was in that. He was so close to saying it, and it's such a meme, you know? Like, I feel like he should have said it, but...
Actually, doesn't Paul Rudd say it when he's talking to...
He almost says it, but she stops him. She's like, that's enough, you know?
Oh,
like,
I thought he did actually say it. Okay.
But, I like this movie. Of course, you know, like, it was super cheesy and corny, but... They almost always are. And, you know, it's geared towards kids anyway. So, you know, that's the thing. So I think all in all, it was a pretty fun movie.
Okay, here's my thing. I didn't hate this movie, but I did find it kind of disappointing and kind of mediocre. I think my biggest problem is, we reviewed the Ghostbusters Afterlife on this channel as well, if people want to go back and see that. And I liked that movie okay as well. I was kind of lukewarm on it, but And I think I like that movie a little bit more than this one. I think my problem is these movies they use nostalgia as a crutch, I think, rather than doing their own thing enough. And I was a little more forgiving of it in the first movie, Ghostbusters Afterlife, because number one, the original Ghostbusters weren't in that one as much. Number two, I feel like that film was basically just a tribute to Harold Ramis in a lot of ways. So, like, I was kind of okay with it. And number three, I felt in that film it was kind of like the old timers say it, like putting their stamp of approval, like, on this new cast, you know, and saying, yeah, we're okay with this. And so I was more forgiving it for it there. But now with this movie, like, I wanted them to take the training wheels off. I wanted them to do their own thing more. And, like... Again, they just bring back things we've seen before. They keep bringing back the original cast members. And, like, you know, I'll say this. I think Dan Aykroyd, both Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson, they at least, like, try in this movie. I think Bill Murray did phone it in a little bit, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
The other two, I think I genuinely tried. But them being in the movie so much, I think ate up screen time that could be going to new characters. You know, I think of, like, Finn Wolfhard, like, everything he did in the movie was fine, but I feel like his character took a back seat. Like, we had a little internet issue, but yeah, we were talking about how, you know, Finn Wolfhard, his character didn't get much to do in this movie. And the other
he's
thing,
one
that,
of the bigger names in this movie, like, as a young person, he's the biggest name for those young people, right? Like,
coming off of, like, Stranger Things. Yeah, I would say so. And the other thing that kind of bugged me in this movie is, like, one of the themes of the movie, which I don't have a problem with, is this whole thing, like, found family and, like, you know, Paul Rudd kind of coming into, like, the stepdad role and everything. That's, like, an evergreen theme, and I'm okay with it. But I feel like this movie, and we'll get into it more as we get into spoilers, I feel like they kind of, like, really manufactured, like, they tried to manufacture some tension between, like, those characters, but I never really bought into it that there was much there. You know, they all seem like good people. They all seem like they're, you know, a family that for the most part gets along.
I didn't pick up any attention at all. Like, it went over my head.
they do kind of try to squeeze some in there between, mostly between the daughter, Phoebe, and the parents at different points. But again, like, it felt a little bit forced, and it just, I don't know, it was never enough to really have a payoff, in my opinion. So AJ, usually in this section, we say, like, would we recommend seeing this in theaters, wait for streaming, or not watch at all? What's your recommendation?
I'd say wait for streaming. Watch it with the family at home.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Like, this movie's not a travesty. It's totally watchable. But I think at the end of the day, it'll also be somewhat like forgettable. I don't think it's worth your hard earned dollars unless you're just a diehard Ghostbusters fan to see it in theaters. Yeah, I say 100% wait for streaming. It's fun enough. But like I said, it just and as we get into spoilers, we'll get into it more. It just kind of trots out nostalgia over and over again. And like if I had one note to like people like rebooting franchises, it's if we could put a moratorium on like nostalgia and memberberry overload, that would be great. Because you're right. There just wasn't enough original stuff in this movie. Oh, and one other thing I wanted to mention, I call this the not reading the room problem with this movie, is there was a character in the original film, Ghostbusters Afterlife, named Podcast, which I feel like everybody hated. And they bring him back in this movie. And I'm like, what is with this kid? Is he like the son of an executive or something? Like, I don't know. I find this character annoying.
I think he's just supposed to be comic relief, but he wasn't funny. So I don't know what the point was. Yeah.
No, terrible character. Please do away with him going into the future. Or do a brave move and have him killed off. But then they just bring him back as a ghost, so he still wouldn't be rid of him.
I've got my issues with this movie. That's one of them. We'll get into it as it goes. Yeah.
And we're back. AJ, we've time traveled a day into the future. We were having some internet problems that hopefully won't plague us today. But AJ, we did our non-spoiler review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So are you ready to get into spoiler country?
Let's do it.
All right. So Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, we start out with actually a poem on screen, which is Fire and Ice by Robert Frost. Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if I had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice. AJ, do you think every Ghostbusters from here on now has to start with a poem just to be consistent?
I mean, these movies are so adult and grown up and just so mature that I think it only makes sense.
I mean, the kids love their Robert Frost and their poets. So I'm thinking so.
Yeah, for sure.
But the real movie opens in 1904, actually, at the firehouse. Firefighters are responding to emergency at the Manhattan Adventurers Club. And I know, AJ, we talked about this before, but that totally reminds me of like that South Park. Like, I forget what their thing was, but that thing they put like Chef in when they had
this. Chef was a part of the organization, right?
Yeah.
It was all just ghettos.
It was like the Super Adventurers Club or something.
They're like colonial pedals.
But anyway, they find this room that's full of frozen people. There's also a gramophone playing, a wax cylinder, and there's a woman, a mysterious woman dressed in brass holding a round orb with a bunch of writing on it. So now we jump to the modern day with our new Ghostbusters from Ghostbusters Afterlife. They're in the Ecto-1 chasing a dragon-type ghost. It's causing like manholes to pop out and cause a bunch of damage. And so, AJ, I mentioned this in our non-spoiler review, is that I did feel like there was some manufactured tension in this movie between some of the characters. So we get that first taste of this here, where like Phoebe calls her mom by her name. I think her name's Callie, rather than actually calling her mom. And she's like, that's mom to you. But like, I was like, they always have seemed to get along great, and they don't really ever like set up a thing to where she would have like a major problem with her mom, why she would be like disrespecting her. And like at this point in the movie, like Phoebe's like relatively happy because she's ghost busting, which is what she wants to do. So like, I don't know. I that came out of nowhere to me, and I'm like, oh, okay, I guess so.
I agree.
So Phoebe gets in the like sidecar thing. We also seen them do this in Ghostbusters Afterlife. She shoots the ghost with the proton pack while Trevor tries to trap it with the remote control car trap out the bottom of the Ecto-1, which I think we also saw that them work that trap in Ghostbusters Afterlife. But the ghost gets out of range, so Callie uses a new drone trap to catch it. The drone flies off, and then she's got these fancy goggles where she can like see through the camera of the drone and everything. But I was wondering, like, really, why didn't they just out of the gate use that drone? Because this is a flying like you know, dragon ghost. And I don't know, it just seems like that would have been I guess most of the ghosts fly to a certain extent, but I don't know, it just seems like the drone would have been the more efficient option, like right off the bat.
They just want to show off the car, like, hey, look, a callback to the last movie. And
just remind people he is with it
too. A little cool car action.
Yeah, just remind people that it exists, I guess.
Yeah.
I will say, like, I think it was a good idea for them to make it so, like, they can fight ghosts in the Ecto-1 rather than just have stationary, like, boots on the ground fights. They can actually have a little more dynamic action scenes with them having to race around corners and everything.
Yeah, the vehicles are, like, kind of a big part of this movie, to be honest. Like, they really do play a part.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll actually get a brand new vehicle later on. Mm-hmm. So as they're doing this, like, they break off a hunk of a building. They run into a bunch of stuff, a bunch of, like, scooters and stuff. And they really do, like, get close to, like, killing a bunch of pedestrians. So because of that, they're called into the mayor's office. And it's revealed that the new mayor is Walter Peck from the first movie. Again, playing on the whole nostalgia thing. And AJ, you and I talked about this a little bit, where, like... To me, I was disappointed by this. Not that they got that actor back, but that he's, like, basically the same, like, a-hole that he was in the first movie. Like, I think it would have been much, much more interesting if, you know, he was on their side this time. Like, he learned the error of his ways and, like,
yeah,
maybe they swerve you, like, you think he's going to be that guy, but then he's like, oh, no, like. I did learn my lesson. I don't know. I just thought they could have done something more with him that would have been more interesting than just basically having him be the same exact character that he was in the first movie.
Agreed, yeah.
So he dresses them all down, and he basically forbids Phoebe from ghost busting because she is a minor. I think they mentioned that she's 15 in this movie. And he says he hopes to shut the Ghostbusters down forever. So we find out through a television segment that Winston is apparently a philanthropist. So AJ, it's been a while since I watched the original Ghostbusters films, but I didn't know, like, how Winston became, like, this wealthy philanthropist, or if they ever, like, mentioned that or set it up.
He never mentions himself either. Like, maybe in the first movie they did, but he doesn't talk about what he does for a living or, like, what his company is or anything. He just talks about his little side gig with the Ghostbusters, but you would think, like, his company would be a big deal. Like, maybe it's related to the Ghostbusting. Maybe they do tech stuff, but they don't mention it.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about. Mm-hmm. So Phoebe is mad at the idea that she can't bust ghosts for another 3 years. And so she gets in a fight with her mom. And they have a bit here, which I forget exactly what it was, but she's like, you know, you better... stop talking right now or something. And then it does, like, a hard cut, and, like, the implication is, like, she kept talking and, like, you know, really, like, I don't know, cursed at her mom or something, you know, really, like, gotten a screaming fight with her or something.
Like, I think Paul Rudd's like, I didn't know she knew those words or something like
right,
that.
Right. So, yeah. So the implication there is, like, she yelled at her mom. Mm-hmm. So Callie and Paul Rudd's character, I think his name's Gary, they go into the basement. And Callie, like, talks to him like she would like him to start taking on a more fatherly role and help disciplining the kids so she doesn't have to be the only one that does that. He puts the ghost in the containment unit, but something is wrong, and it starts like shaking and stuff, and they have this like hard time getting it to close. So Gary has Janine look at the containment unit. And again, nothing against Annie Potts, but like, I just don't think like, she had much to do in this movie. Like, she was there and she like did her role, but I don't know. I don't think she really added much.
Yeah. I mean, it was just for nostalgia's sake.
Yeah. So she's going to have one of Winston's engineers look at it. So now we go to Ray, and we find out that Ray, he hosts some kind of weird occult podcast on the internet. And unfortunately, the producer of his podcast is the character podcast from Ray. Ghostbusters Afterlife, a character I really don't like, but they brought him back. And I thought this was weird. So, like, he has this woman there, and she's like, oh, I have this, like, watch, and I think my husband it belonged to my husband or something, and I think he might be trying to communicate with me, so Ray's like, okay, we'll scan it. So he takes out the monitor. Yeah, I forget what they call it. It's not like it's not an EKG, but it's like three letters, like whatever. Oh, and okay. He scans it and like he's like, nope, it's clean. No spectral activity. And so Podcast like smashes it with a hammer. So I guess all, and there's a bunch of other people in line to go through the same process. So I guess these people are agreeing that like, hey, if the item I give you, even if it's super valuable, if it's not haunted in some way, you can destroy it on camera. Is that what the deal is?
It seems so, yeah.
It's so stupid. Mm-hmm. And we also find out that Podcast is living in Ray's basement. And I'm just like, so the first movie took place in like Oklahoma. And I'm like, and we'll find out here in a little while that one of the other characters from that town are in this movie as well, very conveniently. And I'm like, really? So Podcast Mom is just like, oh yeah, you can totally go live in this weirdo's basement in New York for the summer or whatever. I thought that was so weird. Like they just write these characters into this movie, like, and they're very conveniently, and it's like, it doesn't really make sense, but they're like, we had to get them there some way, I guess.
Yeah, Podcast was that important to the movie.
So Phoebe comes over to visit Podcast, and we find out that the mini marshmallow men from the first movie came with him, and they're in the basement with him. And you know what I discovered watching this? And I think it's because in my screening, there was a preview for like the next like Despicable Me movie. I'm like, these guys are totally minions. That's what they are.
Yeah, you're right.
There's these little guys that are just like, you know, you can't make out what they're saying, and they're violent towards they're one like another. Cute. Yeah, like they're cute, and they get into hurt,
they're fine.
Exactly. Yeah, they're totally minions.
Yeah.
So while they're in the basement, Nadim, who's played by Kumail Nanjiani, he comes into Ray's store to sell him some old relics that apparently belong to his grandmother. One of the relics is the orb, of course, from the opening scene. Ray says that the writing on the outside of the orb suggests that it is used to contain an evil spirit. When he scans it, everything starts shaking and a big wave of frost covers the street. And the containment unit at the firehouse also gets covered in frost, and like the area surrounding it like, on the wall like busts out. So like just scanning this item apparently had this like huge effect. Although, why it would, like, travel and specifically, like, hit the firehouse, that seems a little convenient to me, but okay.
I think the firehouse is, like, the nexus point. So, like, at some point you'll see later on that it does have, like, a meaning to this creature. And, like, it is weird that, like, it's able to do stuff while it's captured. No other ghost is able to do that. Nothing, like, it was sealed up. Like, I don't know how it was able to do anything, like, sealed up, like. I don't know.
Yeah, there are definitely like things in this movie where you just kind of gotta explain it with your own imagination, I think.
Because like it could have done something before, like this whole time. I guess it was like, oh, they do explain it a little bit later, but still, I don't know. It's a little strange.
That's true. It's not like scanning it should have like allowed it to do something that it couldn't do before. So you would think it would have, like, even though it couldn't totally escape, like it could have been like doing whatever it did, just did. Like, yeah. It could have been shaking things, sending out ice, whatever.
I mean, so, yeah. At least while he was walking to that place, like, what was stopping it from doing it then, you know? Like, or even after, like, yeah.
Yeah, you're totally right. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Hey, what do you think about Kumail Nanjiani's character? I've always liked him as a character, like, as an actor. He's always been, like, a funny, like, comedic actor. Like, it was kind of like a... It felt kind of like a weird character, but I thought he was funny. Like, I appreciate his humor.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. Yeah, I liked him. Like, in this movie, like, he didn't have a ton to do, more towards the back end of the movie. But, like,
yeah.
I do wonder, like, will they continue to use him, like, in this franchise going forward? Or if it was just like a one-off, like, because he is kind of specific to the villain of this movie. So, like. I'll be interested to see if they keep using him.
Right.
Now, I think this next scene, it might have happened a little bit before and after the scene I just said. So at some point, Trevor in the firehouse, he discovers green slime dripping out of the attic. And so already we're not surprised. We're like, okay, here comes the Slimer cameo. But he tells his mom about it, and she's like, well, you can handle it. So he's like, yeah, I can handle it. So he gets a proton pack and goes up. He finds Slimer. He ends up getting slimed. But then at some point later, he goes back up there with a trap, and he puts like a bunch of Cheetos out and a bunch of Cheetos on the trap in order to try to trap him. And I think the second part of the scene actually happens around here, because like, I think the orb doing what it did caused the building to shake. And so Slimer was able to get away and not get trapped by him. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. But again, with the nostalgia and member berry stuff, like, remember in Ghostbusters Afterlife, they actually, like, they didn't have Slimer, so they introduced that other, like, slime ghost just to be like, hey, remember Slimer?
Yeah, so, like, was this Slimer or not? Like, what was the deal here?
Yeah, this was legit Slimer, but with the nostalgia thing, it's like, okay, the first movie they knew it wouldn't make sense to use Slimer, so they just made, like, a substitute Slimer. And so now they're like, well, we're back in New York. Let's bust out Slimer again. I'm like,
all right, true, yeah.
To me, like, nothing against Slimer, but I don't know. I never thought he, like, played, like, a big enough part that they need to, like, keep bringing him back every Ghostbusters, you know? I think...
Never in a Ghostbusters was he a thing, like in a movie. Like, only in a cartoon I noticed that Slimer was, like, a character, right? Like, in the movies, he wasn't really, a focal point in any way.
He was in them, but I wouldn't call him a focal point. He was just kind of this, like, side character that, like, I guess became famous or whatever. And the cartoon probably made him more famous, I assume. But,
right, yeah.
But, yeah, to me, like, at this point, they could do without him.
Yeah.
So Winston's engineer examines the containment unit. And, okay, so you mentioned – so this is where this guy says, like, you know, they picked this firehouse for more than just its looks or whatever. It actually is a nexus point between, like, our world and, like, I don't know if it's technically, like, the ghost world plane or the afterlife or you know, where the ghosts something cross like over that. To. Something like that, like a nexus between worlds. But I'm like, and again, I haven't watched the first movie in a very long time, but, like, I don't remember them saying anything about, like, oh, this building is special, you know, so I don't know if that's a retcon or what it is.
Yeah, I think it's a retcon. Yeah, it was a little exposition-y, you know, like the way he explained it, it seemed like it was new information.
Yeah. So it does turn out that the containment unit is getting full, so the team meets with Winston to tell him that they need a bigger containment unit, and he's like, didn't you know we've already built one? So he takes them.
Nobody tells them anything. They didn't even know anything was happening.
I was wondering that too. Like, Winston, if you didn't tell them this information already, how would they know?
Right. Yeah. You're the guy who's in charge of all this. Like, you know what they know.
The way he said that line, he said it all like mysterious. And like, I'm like, Winston, like, if you didn't tell them, like, I don't know why they would.
Right.
So he takes them to this old aquarium that's been converted into a ghost busting lab. And Trevor discovers that his love interest, Lucky, from the first movie, is an intern at the lab. So this here, just another convenient thing to get somebody from the first movie to this movie. But I'm like,
well, Oklahoma.
But okay, yeah, which is silly. And but the thing is like, are you telling me like she wouldn't have like give Trevor a heads up? Like, hey, guess what? I got an internship. I'm going to be coming to New York. Like, this was their first meeting.
She's part of the Ghostbusters organization. Like, she's working on weapons for them.
It makes no sense that he would have found out right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
Also, like, and I talked about this in the non-spoiler review about how the Trevor character kind of gets a, you know, short shrift in this movie storyline-wise. Like, their relationship did not get expanded upon at all in this movie.
No way.
Like, no development.
When they introduced her, I was like, okay, they're going to have a storyline here that's going to, you know, kind of take over a little bit. Not at all. I don't even see them together after that, I don't think.
They are a little bit, like, towards the end, like, on the roof of the firehouse and stuff like that. But, like, yeah, not very much. Like, there's really no development with either their characters or their relationship. There was just nothing. There was really no reason to even have her there, really.
No.
So they're shown this device that can remove like like if a device is possessed, it can separate that like ghostly soul from the device. Mm-hmm. They use it on like a Walkman or something here, or like a CD player or something. Mm-hmm. And they also see there's a bunch of ghosts that are being studied, and they're like imprisoned behind glass. So like, of course, we know at some point they're going to get loose, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And so there's this one short ghost that kind of like Slimer. He can spew slime. Yeah. And there's also this like red light entity that can like quickly jump from item to item and possess it. Like it goes to like a vacuum cleaner, and it can go to just about, you know, anything and possess
any inanimate object. Yeah.
Right. So even right then I'm like, well, I know they're going to use this as a plot device somewhere down the way.
Yeah, for sure. I know. Yeah.
They also have several large containment units, although they do mention that if they were to like, you know, take one trap at a time and move the ghost from the firehouse containment unit to these ones, like it would take them like, I think it says like years to do it. Yeah. So I'm like, does this really help the firehouse if like it would take them that long to transfer the ghost from that containment unit to the new ones?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe they can find a different way. I don't know. Mm. Ray, he also shows up there and he gives the orb to the lab so they can study it. So back at the firehouse, Gary tries to get closer to Phoebe. He pretends that his proton pack is broken so that she can fix it. And they have a little bit of dialogue there. I don't remember exactly what they said. But, mm-hmm. you know, he's trying to get closer to her. Later on, Phoebe goes out to a park. She sets up a chessboard and a ghost starts playing with her. And in Afterlife, they did this where like it was like Egon playing chess with her. Mm-hmm. But this time it turns out it's a ghost named Melody. Melody apparently was 16 years old when her and her family died in a fire. So like her ghost is like surrounded by flames. Mm-hmm. Now, AJ, question for you. Like, I have a dark theory here, which they don't actually, like, I don't think they say this, but I was curious about it. So she carries with her a matchbook that has a single match in it, and this is, like the kind of item that bounds her to this plane or whatever. Now, do you think, like, her family was killed either because she was playing with matches and accidentally killed them, or, like, purposely, like, killed them? Like, I don't know. I just feel like maybe there's a dark backstory there. Like, why does she have the one match? What's the significance of that? Why did she stay a ghost and her family didn't?
Well, I think she kind of states that, like, there's a point where I think she kind of mentions, like, it wasn't on purpose or anything. It wasn't, like, her, you know, intention. Or that's just the impression I got. Maybe I read into it and I thought that. But I didn't feel like it was on purpose. I didn't think there was any malicious intent.
But maybe it was still her like playing with matches or like, and she was accidentally the cause, do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that's for sure.
Okay.
She was the reason they died. She used those matches and something went wrong.
Okay. Okay. Also, question for you. So I wasn't sure because they never really say this, but like, do you think the implication was that the Phoebe character is gay and that perhaps,
yeah, okay, they're both into each other?
See, I kind of thought that they never explicitly say it, but like I had that suspicion, but then I'm like, am I reading too much into this? I wasn't sure, but like I did get that feeling, and I was like, that's probably why they mentioned that she's like, you know, forever 16 as a ghost or whatever. You know what I mean?
Like the right age for each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. So later on, the team is called on a job and Phoebe is left behind because she's not allowed to bus ghosts anymore. But while her family is out, the phone rings and there's a restaurant that needs a ghost busted. I feel like I maybe missed some scenes in between here, but I'm going to hit the gist of everything. So Phoebe ends up taking that call. So she gets Podcast to go with her to get in the ghost busting gear. And so they go to this restaurant and the ghost there ends up being Melody. So like Phoebe, like since she's distracted with that, like she fires a proton thing, but she like either intentionally misses or because she hesitated, like misses Melody and like just shoots the glass out of the restaurant or whatever.
So this is where I really had a problem with this. She's already not supposed to be ghost busting. She's supposed to be smart. She's already let the ghost go. What was the decision to like bust out the glass and possibly get in trouble for ghost busting? She doesn't get in trouble, but she should have. Like, it was a dumb move. Like, it didn't make any sense why she would do that. It was just...
Yeah, I was questioning that too, like, because it seemed like, you know, if she already made up her mind that, like, oh, this is Melody, I don't want to shoot her, like, you would think she was just like, oh, not shoot at all. But I don't know if they're trying to play it like either, like, she had a split second thing where, like, okay, maybe I will shoot her, but she was already gone. Or, like, maybe she, like, wants to still make the restaurant and podcast, like, think she's, like, trying to get the ghost. And I don't know. But yeah, terrible idea.
Yeah.
And we find out that the restaurant is named Melody. So I assume that was like her family's restaurant and they named it after her or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't pick up on that, but okay, interesting. So that's why she was there perhaps. Yeah.
I think so.
Okay.
So Phoebe goes back to the firehouse and Melody appears outside her window. She tells Melody that she missed on purpose. So they start talking. Eventually they go down to the containment unit. Melody says that they live on different dimensional planes. Phoebe theorizes that Melody might be bound as a ghost by that matchbook she carries that has the single match in it because like of the history of that item. Back at the lab, Lucky puts the orb in the soul machine to try to extract the soul out of it or you know, the entity out of it. But the machine freezes up and that red entity that was like possessing inanimate objects ends up escaping. Mm-hmm. The engineer grabs the orb, but it freezes his hand. And this also causes a wave of frost to cover the street where Melody is walking. Mm-hmm. The entity speaks to her. And so we find out that Melody is working for the entity that's in the orb.
I mean, this once again, like there's questions like, how is this orb talking to Melody? Like, There's no tool that's going over it now. Like, was it doing this whole time? Like, ever since Kumail Nanjiani took it out of that room? Or, like...
Oh, you know what? That's at least a plausible theory, because that room, it's surrounded by brass, that room. Yeah. So that actually would make some sense that, like, when it was in that room, it couldn't do anything. So there's been a relatively short amount of time that it could do that, I guess. Okay.
I guess.
That makes a little better sense, I guess.
It is pretty insightful, though, for this creature, this ghost or whatever, to, like, know exactly who to reach out to in that time and, like, who to manipulate before it even knew anybody.
That is a good point because, like, okay, so let's assume once it gets out of the brass room, like, it can do more. Mm-hmm. It automatically knows that, like, you know, that... oh, these two like each other and I can, you know, it almost has to be omnipotent too. Like,
right. Yeah.
So you're right. That still doesn't make a whole lot of sense that it would put it together that fast that it could manipulate Melody into helping him. And yeah, you're right. Melody does like, after the entity speaks to her, she's like, does it have to be her? So we at least get the sense that like, she's not a total like scumbag of a character, you know, she doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So back at the lab, they show the team what happened and how the orb affects other magical things like the mini marshmallow men. Like it causes them to kind of freak out and podcast records them reacting to the orb. Now I might've missed something here. I forget exactly what triggered this, but basically Trevor, Lucky, and that engineer guy, they decide to go and investigate Nadim's apartment because they're
they talked about it. They're like, where'd you get it from? Who's the guy who even brought this in? So like that kind of led them to like go look for him.
Okay. So yeah, they go to Nadim's apartment and he shows them his grandmother's hidden room, which again, the walls are all brass. We see that brass costume that the lady was wearing in the opening scene. Mm-hmm. There's also, I didn't actually notice these the first time they were in this room, but you know, you see them later. There's like this big set of horns in there.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice that. Yeah.
I didn't at that scene, but you know, we find out later
there's a lot of jokes here. There's like chains everywhere. They keep making the sex dungeon reference for his grandma.
Right. Yeah, so they try to throw in a little bit of humor there.
Yeah.
And so they end up scanning Nadim, and they find out that he's, like, full of spectral energy. Mm. Now, my question is here, this seemed to me like Star Wars, like, is he full of midichlorians? Like, the force is strong with him? Like, because I think this is the first time in Ghostbusters where, like, a person has had, like, almost, like, a superpower. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it is, at least that I know of. And my understanding was that he was going to be possessed. That's kind of what they lead you towards. This whole powers thing is kind of new. They do kind of, like, go over it at some point. Like, they tell you that there were people who had these abilities.
Right.
But still, you wouldn't think they'd be able to figure that out immediately. They did do, like, a little testing, I guess, with regards to that. But I couldn't tell that's what they were testing for. I thought that it was just, like, any kind of supernatural reaction, like, for maybe him being possessed. So, yeah, that was kind of new.
I mean, it would be kind of interesting if there's, like, you know, basically, like, good guy ghosts or that, like, possess people to a certain extent just to, like, give them supernatural powers. But they don't actually, I don't think, explicitly say that. So, right. Like, I'm not sure what we're meant to believe there. It's a little bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, because he has this energy, they take him to Peter Venkman, of course, Bill Murray's character. And Venkman gives him a psychological test. And when he agitates him, they find out that he can manipulate fire. Because there's like, they have like, also, I know they're in a lab, but a little convenient that there just happened to be like a Bunsen burner or whatever going like at that same time. Mm-hmm. For them to notice that, oh, wow, he's having an effect on this flame, you know?
That's true, yeah. I thought they did it on purpose now, but okay, maybe that was just an accident.
I mean, I don't know why they would just assume, because this guy has energy, true, that it would be fire manipulation. But also, with the member berry stuff, the fact that Bill Murray is, like, doing, like, basically a very similar scene to, like, the original movie with, like, the psychological test where he's messing people. I don't know. It seemed like maybe a little on the nose too, as far as nostalgia goes.
Yeah.
So later on, Phoebe hangs out at Ray's store. She asks if he ever imagined what it would be like to be a ghost. He says he thinks about it all the time. And then podcast plays the video he took when he was in the lab. And he notices that there's this weird language playing that they couldn't actually hear when they were in the room, but it's coming up on his recording. Ray says it sounds like a dead language, but he might conveniently know a guy that can help translate it. Mm-hmm. So Ray takes the kids to the library, the same library from the original film, on a motorcycle with a sidecar. And I believe it's called the Ecto-C.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Which I don't know if they call it the same thing in the animated series, but I remember the animated series did have like a, I believe they had the motorcycle with the sidecar. And also, I don't know if it could turn into, or they also happen to have like a, almost like a helicopter type thing too.
Mm, okay.
Hopefully they don't use that in one of these movies, because it seems a little outlandish in live action. Again, I thought it was a little much that they went, you know, nostalgia-wise to that same library from the opening of the original Ghostbusters. Like, couldn't you go somewhere else, you know? But anyway, they meet with Patton Oswalt in the basement of the library.
I enjoyed Patton Oswalt in this movie.
Yeah, like, both him and Kumail Nanjiani are, like, enjoyable.
Yeah.
So if they ever wanted to use them, you know, going forward, I would be fine with that.
Yeah.
So he reveals the lore behind the orb. Apparently there was a horned entity named Garaka, I believe,
mm-hmm.
Who worked for a king. And he used people's fear to freeze them. Eventually, the king became leery of his powers, and the king cut off Garaka's horns, which made him much more powerful. Then a group of protectors known as the Fire Masters were able to contain him in the orb. He then recounts the events from the opening scene with the whole Adventurers Club and those guys getting froze.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the wax cylinder that was playing. So apparently playing the wax cylinder is what opened the orb.
Okay.
So suddenly the possession entity shows up. that's that red entity that can possess anything. And it basically possesses, it gets the wax cylinder it gets it into a garbage bag, and so it possesses the garbage bag and starts mm-hmm. running away with the wax cylinder. So the gang chase it, and because it got to hit these nostalgia points, Ray ends up seeing the same ghost from Ghostbusters 1, the library ghost. And at that point, I was like, really? Really? You got to play these hits again?
I think it's like, it's for young people. They're not going to know all these references. Like, if they haven't all seen these movies.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's for people, you know, more in our age group to watch them. And but again, it just doesn't do much for me to be like, oh, I remember that ghost, you know.
Right.
So they chase the entity outside. It ends up getting on top of the lion statue. So Ray tries to reach the wax cylinder on the statue, but as he does so, the possession entity possesses the statue and makes it come to life. So the kids, they like Ray's like, get the pack from the bike or whatever. So they start flipping all the buttons on the bike, end up getting a proton pack. And she destroys, Phoebe is able to destroy the lion. And in the process, the wax cylinder is also destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, I saw on Twitter that in that scene, there's like a park bench or something that references Sigourney Weaver's character, Dana, like like an orchestra performance. Just so like, there's like an Easter egg of her there, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut to Phoebe at the police station getting yelled at by Winston for destroying the statue. But I'm like, Winston, you're a Ghostbuster. Like, wouldn't you have done the same thing if that lion was about to kill Ray? Like, wouldn't you have done the same exact thing? So I'm like, what are you getting so bent out of shape about?
Pretty unreasonable.
So now Walter Peck enters the room, and he basically thanks Phoebe for giving him the ammunition to close down the Ghostbusters. He's like, now I can, you know, confiscate all your stuff or whatever.
So Phoebe already goes to the restaurant, lets a ghost get away, and fires anyway. She once again goes in ghost belt, which she's not supposed to, in a very public space. All right, so that's two. Let's see what else. There's a list.
But you are right, because she's like a really smart character, but she does a lot of kind of dumb stuff.
Yeah.
I don't blame her for that one. Like, she had to, like, save Ray or whatever, but...
True. Yeah. But that's two things she's done publicly. Like, you would think they would have gone after her for the first one.
That's
second
true.
Second one, they're still like, we're going to shut it down. But, you know, she didn't get in any trouble, seriously, so...
So they do. They kind of do that same bit from earlier, where, except this time the mayor's like, young lady, you can shut your mouth right now, or I can have you arrested. And it does a hard cut to her, of course, being in handcuffs.
Yeah.
Which, even if she did mouth off, I have a hard time believing that the police would have actually put cuffs on her. But So Gary and Callie show up, and Gary yells at Phoebe a little bit. You know, he's trying to be more the disciplinarian, like they set up from earlier.
Right.
Winston tells Ray to take a vacation. He says, like, this isn't how you should be spending your golden years. But, you know, Ray, he's really into this stuff. And he's like, this is exactly how I want to be spending my golden years, you know?
Yeah.
So the team take Nadine back to the firehouse, and they discover that the government has indeed taken all of their equipment. Not that it matters, because in a little bit, they're going to get all their equipment replaced with new stuff anyways. So Ray has Nadine start practicing with a lighter and like trying to get the control the flame from the lighter to light a candle like next to it.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, Gary tries to apologize to Phoebe at her door, but she has already gone out to meet with Phoebe again. With Melody. Sorry. And I might have the order of some of these scenes a little bit off, because they're all happening at around the same time. But Phoebe tells Melody that she has a way to temporarily become a ghost. So she takes her to the lab and gets in that like soul sucking machine.
I think Phoebe, so she invited Melody in. Like, there was a time where Melody visits her house, the firehouse.
Earlier she did.
She invited her in, and Melody kind of went up to that ghost prison, whatever theirs. And she looked very interested. And it was after that we saw Melody talk to this ghost god, like, where she reveals that she's, you know, his pawn.
Right. Yeah, so this is a little bit later, but I think she basically goes back to that park and she sets up the chessboard, but this time Melody like appears like behind her or whatever. And yeah, she tells her like, I have a way of becoming a ghost temporarily. So she takes her back to the lab and she actually gets inside that like soul-sucking machine. And I'm like, this seems like another thing you can rack up to her like not being very smart. Like, I don't know, right. This just seems like, because it's a very like... experimental thing. Like, does she know this won't kill her? Like, she knows for sure this is gonna work.
Yeah, we know it works on inanimate objects. We don't know for sure if it works on people, and those are like possessed items,
right?
Like, yeah,
yeah, that's another thing. Like, she's not possessed, it's like literally like her soul or whatever.
Yeah.
And so she's like, this will only last for 2 minutes, there's like a timer. But when she gets out, she goes to Melody, and like Melody starts crying and she's like, I'm very sorry, like, this is the only way I could get back to my family. And like, he can't control people. He can only control ghosts. So Garaka basically makes Phoebe's like physical body, like start chanting the thing from the wax cylinder.
Hmm.
And so this allows the orb to open up and him to escape. So Garaka forces Phoebe. Oh yeah. I just said, so then, Lucky comes in. She tries to shoot Garaka with a proton pack, but he is able to actually freeze the proton beams, and so they don't do anything. And so Garaka, like, he doesn't like totally freeze Lucky and Phoebe, but he definitely like makes them cold or whatever. I guess frosty.
This is weird. Like, so Lucky is the girl, right? Who the girl that Wolfhard's character likes?
Yeah, she's the one that Trevor likes, yeah.
Okay, so she attacks this guy, and he does not kill her, but then immediately after kills people.
Yeah, he totally could have killed her.
Yeah.
You know, I know these Ghostbuster movies, like, they are supposed to have, like, a light tone and stuff, and not, like, just, like, so they don't want to show, like, people blatantly, like, dying and stuff, especially, like, the main characters. But I don't know. I wouldn't mind these having feeling like they have a little bit of stakes, you know. Like,
yeah,
you know, maybe some people do get legitimately hurt, and there is feels like legitimate danger. But
yeah, even when they threaten death, you don't believe it,
right? Yeah, you totally don't.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a scene that I think was supposed to be meant to be kind of funny, but I kind of thought it was lame. Where Garaka, he goes to this vape shop where, it's called the Fire Master. Like, that's the name of the store. And he's like, are you the Fire Master to this clerk? Like, you know, clerk. And he's like, yeah, I am. What of it or whatever. And so I guess he does kill that guy, even though you don't really graphically see it. He just like freezes.
Once again, Garaka is really smart. Like, you know, he hasn't been around for thousands of years since those ancient times, but he figured out how to read English. He figured out, he was walking the streets just looking for a smoke shop, I guess, or just anywhere it said Fire Starter or Fire Master. He found it, goes inside, kills the guy, but then has the awareness to go find the room where he was locked up in, even though he couldn't have, like, seen it from within that orb. You know, like, he just has a lot of awareness, it just seems. I don't know.
I mean, again, like, I guess you could say, like, you know, maybe he could see inside the brass room, or he could see as soon as they took him out. So he's like, oh, he knew that apartment he was in. But still, he would have to have some omniscient power to be like, how many vape shops are in New York? And he just he finds this one called the Fire Master. So yeah, there's definitely some stuff that doesn't really make sense. And the whole thing with like him putting like knowing how to manipulate Melody and Phoebe and so quickly. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
I'm like,
but yeah, then so like, Garaka,
he can mind control these ghosts. He never really mind controls Melody though. Like, he doesn't put her under his like spell in that way. And we'll see why that's a problem
that's
later.
True. Yeah, that's true. He doesn't I don't know if he's actually able to, well, it does seem like kind of is, but yeah, you're right. He just kind of manipulates her through like, you know, the offer of her seeing her family again.
Yeah.
So he goes back to Nadim's apartment into the room, and he puts his horns back on his head so he becomes all powerful again. So now we get that scene from the trailers, the beach scene, where he starts to basically freeze up the whole city, you know, waves of ice hitting. And there's, I like how there's like everywhere these big like ice pillars start to come out of the ground, but like everybody is narrowly missed. Like you don't just see some poor guy like impaled on like an ice sword or something, you know what I mean?
Right.
So Gary and Carrie find Lucky and Phoebe, and they drive them back to the firehouse. And I think there's a whole thing where Phoebe's like, I hope you're not mad at me. And they're like, of course we're not mad at you. We're just glad you're alive or whatever.
Yeah.
So they go to the firehouse and they begin to prepare for Garaka's arrival.
This is Phoebe's third mistake. Like, she's not supposed to be involved. She's already gone in public twice. Now she's let a ghost manipulate her into letting a god out. So yeah. Three times she's messed up already. We'll say the one with Ray was kind of like, you know, she kind of had to do it, but still she went out in very obvious public and she was going to get caught, you know, for sure. Should have been caught the first time.
Yeah, she's definitely doing some not very smart.
Yeah.
But she does one smart thing here, which is she puts it together that brass can hurt Garaka. So she melts down a section of the brass fire pole and she coats the metal in her proton pack with it. Although a part of me is like, could she really melt down that metal so quickly and get it all perfectly on there? And I don't know. It seemed like a little far-fetched, but I was like, okay, we'll go with it.
The genius when she wants to be one.
So Winston, Ray, and Janine suit up, and that engineer guy supplies everybody with brand new equipment. He just like pulls up a vehicle and it's full of new proton packs. Janine gets this new one that's just like a wrist proton pack or whatever, all fancy new equipment. Mm-hmm. By the way, they must have, I think, done some reshoots with this movie, because in the trailer, like, there's a scene where like they're all wearing like red jumpsuits and they're like they're on top of the firehouse and stuff like that, and those scenes are not in this movie, so I'm thinking they reworked some stuff.
Okay.
So Trevor and Lucky go to the rooftop to be lookouts, and I don't know if at that point Phoebe goes to the basement. That's where she ends up going. But anyway, the other two, they go to the roof to be lookouts. So there's a bang on the door, which freaks everybody out. But it just ends up being Bill Murray as, you know, Peter Venkman.
Yeah.
Again, like, I like Bill Murray, but out of all the old timers, like, he is the one phoning it in on this movie.
Oh, for sure. He doesn't have a personality change. He's just Bill Murray.
Yeah. I think he was like, you got a half a day, get done what you need to do. So Trevor spots a tricycle moving towards the firehouse. He calls down and Ray's like, oh, it's the possession entity. Get out of there. Get down here. Mm. And so the entity blows the doors off the firehouse. It possesses the Ecto-1, tries to run everybody over. They get behind a desk or whatever so they don't get hit. It then possesses a bunch of paper. There's a bunch of paper flying together, and it makes like a paper airplane that flies up to upstairs. So they go upstairs. Lucky touches that paper with her gun, and it possesses the gun, and it tries to shoot Trevor. But right at that moment, Nadim, he figured out this is another thing. So he figures out his firebending capabilities, which I guess extends to the proton beams, which aren't technically fire.
Right. That's a completely different thing. And like these ancient people, they mastered fire, but I wouldn't think they figured out how to master proton beams at that time.
So, I wouldn't have thought so. So yeah. Yeah, that was a weird choice as well to be able to make him do that. I mean, I don't know, unless they be like, well, really, he manipulates heat, and there's heat coming off those beams. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
I mean, I'm just trying to justify it and so
make it work, yeah.
That the entity ends up going into a pizza and tries to escape again, but Slimer eats the pizza.
Now, why would this kill the entity?
I was wondering that same thing. Like, they're both ghosts. Wouldn't it just come right back out of Slimer and keep wreaking havoc?
And in the cartoon, when Slimer eats something, it just falls out of him anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even when he eats food, it just, like, passes through him or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that didn't really make sense either. Mm. Boy, we're really picking this movie apart. So, Garaka shows up, and I wrote, everyone starts shooting at him while miraculously not crossing the beams. Because remember, that was a thing from the first movie where, like, he's like... At first, he's like, you know, don't cross the beams. It'll cause a big problem. And then, of course, at the end of Ghostbusters 1, he's like, our only chance is to cross the beams. And they do it, but it, like, you know, really messes them up. And here I'm like, there's like eight people shooting proton beams at this entity all right together, and none of them cross beams. Okay.
They really synced up perfectly. They synced up. They knew you were going to go top right. I'll go bottom left. No. Also, in this scene, I don't believe that what's her, the girl, the main character, 15-year-old, she doesn't fire her proton beam, which is the one that has the brass in it.
Yeah, so she at this moment is down in the basement and Melody shows up.
Okay, all right.
And so she confronts Melody, and I forget their conversation exactly, but basically Phoebe tries to guilt her because, like, she's basically like, you're sacrificing my family to go see your family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, Phoebe goes back upstairs. She starts shooting and hurting Garaka because of her brass proton pack. But eventually Garaka is able to freeze her pack up, and so it stops working. So this is where Nadim slides down. Now, I didn't get a good look at the firehouse, but do they have more than one fire pole? Because she cuts the section out of the one, and I don't think this one he slides down is damaged at all. So I'm like, do they have more than one fire pole?
Maybe it goes further down and she cut it like at the very bottom.
Maybe, but I thought they were like at the bottom level. Maybe I'm wrong. And he is wearing like his grandmother's like, you know, brass fire bender outfit. Yeah. And they kind of make a joke out of it because he's like making like noise as he like scooches down.
Yeah.
So yeah, he threatens Garaka, but his lighter, because he's been practicing with it all night, it's out of fluid. So Garaka takes his lighter and destroys it. And so just when it looks like they're all screwed, Melody shows up and she lights her last match. And that allows Nadim to control that fire and attack Garaka, along with Phoebe, whose pack is now thawed out. Oh, I forgot to mention, Garaka, like, instead of killing, which he could have easily done, he, like, kind of froze all the other people a little bit. He
trapped them with, like, spikes that just reached up to their necks.
Right. But now, since they are winning, like, they get thawed out. And Ray theorizes that the containment unit can be modified somehow to contain Garaka. Oh, by the way, I think at some point, didn't that containment unit explode and, like, all the other ghosts got out or something?
Yeah, so I think that maybe it made room for him to, like, get stuck in there.
Yeah, I guess so. Now they got, like, I guess the future movies is them just having to go back.
This is going to be booming,
recapture all those ghosts.
Also, isn't this like a repeat of every Ghostbusters movie? All the ghosts break free, like something breaks all the ghosts free, and like, you know, it like creates a portal into the sky. And like, how many times has this happened in these Ghostbusters movies?
Yeah, I want to say, I was thinking that too, like, hasn't this happened before? You know what I mean? So, yeah, again, so yeah, these movies not doing a whole lot of original stuff. But anyway, Ray modifies the containment unit, and it does indeed work. It captures Garaka, and the day is saved. So Phoebe says goodbye to Melody, who is now allowed to cross over, I guess now that she was able to light that final match. So that's another question I have, is like, could she have lit this match at any time, or did it have to be this specific scenario that allowed her to light that match?
It seems like it had to be this specific scenario. It was mentioned before that she was tethered by that object. I was thinking, like, she let go of that object at the end of this movie and moved on. Like, I wonder if she could have just let go of it before and moved on. I guess she had to, like, have some sort of big event with it where she let go of, like, it being important to her. I don't know. They don't explain it.
Yeah, I was like, could she have lit that at any time and crossed over? Or was there, like, some sort of weird thing where, like, because she killed people with the matches before, she had to like save lives with the final match in order to cross over.
Okay, yeah, could be.
I don't know, man. So now there's a big celebration outside. Winston like is able to get Peck to say on air that he supports the Ghostbusters, because right at that moment everyone's cheering them. He would look bad if he really came down on them at that moment, so he gets him to have to support them. Phoebe ends up calling Gary dad, and so we basically end the movie with him celebrating, oh, she called me dad. But again, that moment would have meant more had there been like some legitimate family strife between them. But I mean, again, even though they tried to like wedge some of that in, I always felt like she liked him, you know? And from like the first movie, she got along with him good. So I'm like, it just always seemed to me like, you know, there wasn't much strife between them. And like, she already thought of him as a father figure, like going into this movie.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if they ever say like, are Gary and Callie actually married or are they just boyfriend, girlfriend?
I think they're boyfriend and girlfriend.
Okay. AJ, did you stay for the mid-credit stinger?
I did not. No, I didn't know there was one.
I did, mostly just because I wanted to listen to the Ghostbusters song. Mm-hmm. You weren't missing much. Basically, this you know, redneck trucker, he gets out at this truck stop, and as he goes to like the payphone or whatever, the mini marshmallow men, the minions, they take over his truck and they drive off with him. Oh, so, okay. That's you missed it. If there was an end credit singer, I did not stay for that one.
Okay.
I did not care enough. AJ, any final points you can think of that maybe I missed here that you'd like to go over?
I just think the whole redemption arc for what's her name? Callie, the girl?
Callie is the mom. Phoebe is the girl.
Phoebe. It just doesn't ring true. She just did too many stupid things. The mistake was hers in the first place to let that thing out. So her fixing it, I mean, it killed people anyway while it was out. You know, it messed up the city. I don't give her too much credit. No.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because you're like, a 15-year-old is going to make stupid mistakes. But then on the other hand, it's like she's a 15-year-old genius. So like, I don't know. Like, maybe it's not as big of a deal as we're making it, but like.
But she's trying to be a Ghostbuster. Like, that is, like, they're saying you're too young to do it. So, I mean, like, it seems like that advice rings true.
If they make another one of these, and I assume they will, because I think this movie is doing, like, all right at the box office.
Yeah,
What would your hopes be going for it? I mean, my biggest hope is just, like I said, I want them to take the training wheels off. Don't rely on nostalgia. Like, nothing against Dan Aykroyd and those guys. They did a fine job, but I would prefer not even seeing them in the next movie. I just wanted to concentrate on the new characters. You know, find something more for Finn Wolfhard to do like that.
I'm right there with you. Phoebe's gotten a lot of airtime. I don't mind her character, but I just think you need to, like, focus on the ensemble cast, you know? Like, Paul Rudd is in this movie, you know? Like, he got some screen time, but, you know, he's a fun, lovable character, you know? Like, people like Paul Rudd, so maybe use him more. Camille Nanjiani, I do hope he comes back. I wouldn't mind seeing more Patton Oswalt, you know? Like, I'm a big fan of his, so I enjoy him whenever he's on screen. Finn Wolfhard, they need to, like, delve into his character a lot more. Like, and if they're going to introduce or play on that love story, then actually do something with it, you know? Like, you brought that character back from Oklahoma, you know? Make something happen with that, or else it just seems pointless.
Yeah, agreed. I was like, why did they wedge her in this movie if they weren't going to develop their relationship at all? And they really don't. So yeah, if you bring her back in, like, at least do something with her, you know?
Yeah.
What about location wise? Like, if they do another one, do you want them to stay in New York, or would you think it'd be cooler if they were maybe called to like another country or another locale or something to investigate?
You know, that would be interesting, actually. You know, like, maybe they end up in like a completely different kind of place, like Miami or LA, or yeah, another country where, like, you know, maybe Japan, where they have, like, you know, a whole different ghost culture there. Like, yeah, like, I wouldn't mind them trying something new with that. Yeah, New York has been done.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. You might get, like, you know, different lore, different types of ghosts, you know. There's a lot you could do, I think, if you put them in different places. So, like, I think that would
even
be cool.
Like Massachusetts, like, you know, where they have that, like, old history, you know, like,
right, like Salem witch trial type stuff.
Yeah,
that could be really cool, actually. Yeah. So AJ, I guess we got nothing left but the scoring round. What would you give this movie on a scale of 1 to 10?
You know, I like Ghostbusters, just the franchise in general, and I enjoy seeing these movies. But, you know, obviously it wasn't the best and well-made movie. There's a lot of plot holes. But I have fun watching them anyway. So I'll go with 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I hate to be copycat, but that is honestly exactly where I was going to go. 6 out of 10. Like, I don't think this movie is. I think Rotten Tomatoes is, it's at like a 40-something%. Like, and I think with Rotten Tomatoes, like, you know, anything less than a 6, like, it counts towards rotten, and like 6 above is fresh. So yeah, technically, I guess we would be contributing to a fresh review, but again, it's not a hearty endorsement. It's right on that borderline, really. But yeah, it's totally watchable. But yeah, like we said in the non-spoiler portion, totally, I would say wait for streaming. This is
Absolutely.
something you can totally catch later. I don't think there's any rush. But yeah, it's a franchise I hope keeps going. I just would like them to break away from the past a little more and try to do something a little more original.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's set up to have a great future, you know, like maybe the first two movies haven't been like extremely, you know, fun to watch in like the storytelling way, but you know, it's still like it's a fun story. Like it's fun. Like Ghostbusters is a fun franchise. The idea of it is fun. The ghosts aren't like super scary. It's just kind of like, you know, a whimsical thing, right? Like it's lighthearted. So I think there's a lot of directions they can go with this in the future, and it's fun for the family to watch. So yeah.
Yeah, and I think the characters are plenty likable. I think the Phoebe character is very likable. I think Paul Rudd's character, you know, it's basically just Paul Rudd, but he's likable. So,
Exactly.
so yeah, I'm totally up for more of these. But you can do better, Ghostbusters. You can definitely do
Right. Yeah.
better. So AJ, I think that'll do it for today's show. Guys, if you will, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. And also, you can subscribe to the podcast in audio form on your podcast catcher of choice. Leave us thumbs up, positive reviews, all that good stuff. You can also tell us in the comments, you know, whatever we missed or what you thought of the movie. If you like, you can follow me on Twitter/X at Zach Jones Live. That's ZachJonesLive. But that'll do it for all of our shenanigans and poppycock this week. Please, please, please tune in again next week. Bye, guys.
Take care.